Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Welcome into the Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. I'm Chase Goodbread, sports columnist with the Tuscaloosa News, along with Travis Ryer. Be sure to click on that like and subscribe button at Ryer on YouTube. Fantastic content from Travis coming there on a regular basis. All kinds of good stuff, Alabama related, SEC related, etc. Check it all out at Ryer on YouTube. Big show here on the Sunday Nighter. We recap Alabama's narrow victory over the Missouri Tigers, 27-24. The final score, Alabama improves to 5-1 on the season, 3-0 in SEC play. Travis, they get it done against a Missouri team that came in 5-0 and left with their first loss. Wild game, a lot going on in that game. A little bit of everything in this one.
There really was. Maybe some breaks in the action, like, you know, early first quarter into the latter stages of the first half, and then it picked up again right before the break, and kind of the same thing in the second half. You had the turnover by Alabama, and Missouri's able to cash in, and you got a brand new football game, and the finish, certainly. You know, Alabama, I talked about this on the channel last night, Chase. I'm sure you probably feel somewhat the same. At least felt like Alabama had put the game away, had won the game at 27-17, converting those fourth downs. And then open the game back up by allowing Missouri to sprint down the field with some chunk plays, cut it to a three-point game. Minute and a half left. There's been some talk about Eli Drinkwitz and onsiding there with the three timeouts. What did you give that any? I didn't really give it any thought at the time. I don't know if you did.
Now, it seemed like a no-brainer to me. I didn't have an issue with that. I did find Alabama's last punt a little curious, given how aggressive they had been with the ball and where they were on the field when they went ahead and decided to give the football back to Missouri, only up three. That was an interesting decision that certainly worked out in the end, thanks to the first career interception for Dejon Lee of Alabama to kind of clinch things. But, yeah, crazy game. I mean, you had the really frightening play right out of the gate with Derek Meadows catching a headshot that put him out. No telling how long he'll be out. Good to see him with a thumbs up as he went to the locker room, but that was certainly a scary moment. And you had a Caden Proctor in the Wildcat play. You had Parker Brailsford with a deflected reception, and you had a fake punt. That did not go well for the Tigers, obviously, on a real close call. Mm-hmm. As far as whether or not they were able to get that first down over on the sideline. So just a lot of wild happenings up there in Columbia.
Yeah, there was, and you kind of anticipated it being a four-quarter game, but in a lot of ways it didn't have to be from the Alabama perspective. You talk about the Wildcat play with Caden Proctor, and it was very impressive to see a guy that size leave his feet and make a cut kind of at the same time.
Yeah.
But he lands just short of the goal line. Of course, the next play, you got Ty Simpson getting his foot stepped on, ruled down by down because, you know, I saw almost the same play last Monday night in person with Trevor Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence got his foot stepped on, went down, really a time and a half. But in the NFL, unless you're down by contact from a defender, you can get back up. Well, in college football, it's dead. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't just that, you know, you didn't get the touchdown from Jam Miller on that play, you lost 4 yards back to the five. Yeah. So borderline catastrophic. But those are the kind of situations you think back on when a team is kind of fighting for its life in a 3-point game that it really probably shouldn't have come down to this. I know a lot of people a little bit down on Connor Talty for missing a 49-yard field goal earlier in the game. Me, not so much. But it did. It had a little bit of everything. But at the end of the day, Alabama does it again for a third straight week, sending a team to the ranks of the beaten after they went in against Alabama unblemished.
Speaking of Connor Talty, they shorted him a couple of yards on that first field goal. That thing was clearly from the 48 that he knocked home at the for his first field goal. They called it a 46-yarder. I didn't quite get that. But
it would have been good from 56, I think, at least. I mean, he hit that one nicely. He hit the 49 well. You know, he just pulled it a little bit. So it wasn't like the Georgia miss that was straight left off of his toe. So, you know, again, all three phases of the game, you had something going on. Offensively, defensively, Alabama once again doing a good job in terms of takeaways. The fake punt stop felt like another takeaway to go along with the two picks that they had of Bo Prabula. And you know, whatever you thought of the finish of the game defensively, give Alabama credit. What, Missouri 1 of 10 on third downs on Saturday?
Right, yeah, very poor on third down was Missouri. And they came into the game, this is what I wrote about, they came into the game basically the best team in the country on third down when you consider both sides of the ball. I think they were number one in the country offensively on third down at like 60% and maybe number three in the country defensively, only giving up like 21-22%. And Alabama ended up 6 out of 15. Alabama was a little more inconsistent on third down in the second half. But 6 out of 15, that 6 out of 15, by the way, does not count a couple of free first downs that Alabama got by penalty on their first touchdown drive, courtesy of Zion Young.
Yeah, 50% on conversion plays between third and fourth. And you're right, that was a big moment there with the penalty. But, yeah, I think that ultimately, when you talk about third down conversions, and you think about a high conversion rate, you know, you would think a team that runs it as well as Missouri does, coming in running for nearly, 300 yards per game? Yeah. Alabama limits the Tigers to 163. Now, Missouri did average 5.8, still hit some explosives against this defense, but the key to the drill was Ahmad Hardy, and he goes for 52 yards on 12 carries, just 4.3. It came in averaging a little over 7. Roberts hurt him with an explosive there late in the second quarter. Prabula hit an explosive and also had a touchdown on his own keep there, in the third quarter. So wasn't perfect by any means on either side of the ball or in the kicking game. But the bottom line is, as I think Kalen DeBoer succinctly put it in the post game, in the big moments, this team is doing in SEC play anyway what it didn't do a year ago. It's making the plays that have to be made. And Chase, maybe most impressive about that, you talked about Lee making his interception, but what about Lottie Brooks on that fourth down? I mean, that was a perfect ball from Ty Simpson there on that final scoring drive. But a lot of times young receivers can't finish that type of play, and Brooks did right. Just that.
Yeah, Brooks just seems to be getting better and better, and it's clear that DeBoer likes him a lot. He should. He's making a big contribution, taking some snaps away from some other guys, and deserves every snap that he gets. Ryan Williams, I saw you noted on social media, and it became clear eventually he wasn't himself in that game. He was listed as probable on the injury report all week. I asked DeBoer about it after the game. He said, look, he got dinged up against Vanderbilt and wasn't quite himself, wasn't able to practice a whole lot, never even got targeted the whole game. Just by Ryan Williams being out there, you would think that, you know, maybe a little safety help goes his way, depending on what kind of route he runs. And maybe just in those terms, he helped Alabama out. But more or less a non-factor was Ryan Williams on 32 snaps.
No, he wasn't. I mean, I talked about this, and I'm sure you talked about it too or written about it. You look at the stat line combined for Jeremy Bernard and Ryan Williams, and you go on the road and beat a top 15 team with, what did Jeremy have, 3 catches for 20 yards?
Yeah.
Something like that. I mean, going into that game, if you knew that was going to be the combined stat line for those two guys, and even if you throw Isaiah Horton's 3 for 34 or whatever it was, it wasn't a prolific day. It was a hard-earned day for that Alabama offense. And, you know, give those backups credit too. I mean, guys like Kevin Riley with the touchdown catch there early in the game, and then Daniel Hill threw 2 touchdown passes in the game. They both went to running backs, or 2 of them did. And so guys stepped up. It was like you talked about with Derek Meadows. That was tough to see with Jam there in the fourth quarter. I mean, he took a big shot, which, you know, at this point, I understand crown of the helmet and those type of things and how that plays into it in terms of targeting. But you got guys going neck and head just with shoulders now. And right. I guess that's not really covered as much by the rule.
Jam Miller, who knows what's going to happen? Who knows if he'll even be available for Tennessee? I imagine we'll know more when you and I reconvene for the midweeker to preview that game coming up at Bryant-Denny Stadium. But you're right. I mean, not a lot, nothing really production-wise from Williams. Didn't even get targeted. Jeremy Bernard, by the way, and this is unusual for any receiver, even a starting receiver, he played 77 out of 78 snaps in this game. I mean, that's you look at the snap counts on offense, and it was Proctor, Brailsford, and Simpson with 78 each, and then here's Bernard, 77. They did not want him off the field, clearly.
Yeah, usually wide receivers aren't the guys that are as looking forward to bye weeks as, say, the big guys, or, you know, even some other positions on a football team. But I think Jeremy, he transcends the receiver tag. I mean, he is a offensive utility type player more than he is just a receiver.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt about it. Ty Simpson strong again. Travis, 3 touchdown passes overall, a couple of hundred yards, 23 out of 31, sacked 4 times. You know, last week on the Sunday Nighter, when we were breaking down Alabama Vanderbilt had gotten 4 sacks on Simpson. And at that time I said, you know, I thought the pass protection against Vanderbilt was better than 4 sacks showed. I didn't think that was the case in this one. He was under significantly more duress from the Tigers. They were able to get a good bit of pressure on him. I think they had pressure on him like 15 out of 40 dropbacks, according to PFF. Sacked 4, so that's 8 sacks now in 2 weeks. But the guy continues to perform, and a big part of it, I think, Travis, is his effectiveness against the blitz. He was 7 out of 11 against the blitz against Missouri, couple of touchdown passes. He knows where the hot route is when somebody's coming.
He does, and I think, you know, Missouri just ramped that up even more, though, as the game went on. And I think sometimes they lived by it, like they did on the strip sack of Ty there in the third quarter. I believe that was a pressure. I don't think that was simulated. I think that was 5-man. And they were able to get home. He's got to do a better job of taking care of the ball in that situation. I mean, there's times where you're hit from your blind side, or there's things that happen in a pass rush where you can't really control ball security. Mm-hmm. That felt like a time where he could. And didn't do a good enough a job. And I'd give him credit too. I saw some of his comments post game, and he's a guy that stands up there and owns it. I mean, even in a win where he throws for 3 touchdowns and the interception column is clean, he did have the 1 turnover on the strip sack. You know, he's obviously got high expectations, and this offense is predicated on explosive plays in the passing game. And when you look at him with 31 attempts for 200 yards, that's low for this offense. That's under 7, pretty good bit under 7 per attempt. You know, I think they can typically live around 9 or 10 at least. So they definitely have some things to work on, and there's some things on tape that Missouri was able to do at times that I think you'll see Tennessee incorporate as soon as this week.
Yeah, Simpson was definitely pointed the thumb post game. Even the pressure, he put some of that on himself. Mm-hmm. He said, I blew a couple of protection checks pre-snap. Good. You want to see the quarterback do that, obviously, when things go wrong, is take some of the blame. And he did not have a perfect game, but he had a very good game and just a phenomenal throw to Brooks. His accuracy is off the charts. I mean, he's the best quarterback in the SEC, I think, Travis. That's fair. Best passing quarterback, anyway.
I would agree with that right now, for sure, from the cup. He is. I think there's some other guys that are more along that dynamic sort of
Diego,
but even Talen Green. Talen Green's on a bad team, but if you watch Talen Green of Arkansas, it is a wow show. Now, there will also be some catastrophic mistakes probably mixed into that, but that goes back to kind of the consistency, you know, that you see from.
Want to make a difference in your community, but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously, your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Tie right now on a weekly basis. That's why you go for three fourth downs. You know, when you could probably run the kicker out there at just about any of those, but you don't, because you feel like. And you also have a lot of confidence in Ryan Grubb to get it dialed up too. And it seems like on the touchdown pass to Daniel Hill, it always seems like he's got one more in that back pocket. You know, a lot of these offensive coordinators, they'll blow it all out there in the first half or in the first three quarters. And in crunch time, they may not have that one extra thing in their back pocket, but it seems like Grubb pretty much on a weekly basis has just that.
Nobody even on Hill. I don't know if there's something got blown defensively for Missouri there, but he was all by himself for that touchdown.
It was almost like he hid behind Caden Proctor over there, you know, and just kind of snuck out, but you're right. And, you know, look, it's kind of a short yardage situation and defenses are still all ramped up and thinking, you know, this is a run situation. And, you know, we've seen Grubb time and time again this season, just sort of take advantage of that. Maybe the lone exception was the interception against Vanderbilt in the first quarter, you know, when they went play action on that fourth and short.
You know, last week when we broke down Vanderbilt, we were talking about how the Commodores offense is really not well suited to play from behind. And as I watched Bo Prabula trying to sling it down the field late in the game, I got the same sense about Missouri.
Yeah, I think that was the key to the whole thing was – you know, he hurt you with his legs a couple of times, and that was the thing you were probably trying to limit. But it's tough because of how good they are running the football with their back. So they run that outside zone. They run that outside zone. Then he keeps off of it, you know, and now you've got an edge player that's in conflict, or, you know, if your safety gets in the wrong gap to go along with your edge player or vice versa. You know, you kind of give up those type of runs. And then even in one-on-ones, you know, he got Bray Hubbard. Bray Hubbard was there. He had him. And Prabula still won that one pretty easily in the open field. But absolutely, that's why I didn't really like Alabama even pressuring with five late in the game. Because I just felt like Alabama didn't have a lot of sacks to show for it. But it felt like the four-man rush was affecting Prabula from the early outset of the game. Did you pick up on that? And, you know, and Womack brings five a couple of times late in the game. And it just seems like when you do that, you know, that's when you leave yourself a little bit exposed on the back end. They brought four on Lee's interception. And, you know, eventually a guy like that, he'll throw it to you, I think.
and which is what he did ultimately. And he missed a kid who was wide open too on that interception by Lee. If you watch that play, Dejon Lee, Lee was in a tough spot with the way everything was aligned there, but he left the outside guy to get in position to make that interception. And if Prabula goes to, I think his name's Johnson, number
Johnson.
Two,
Marquise Johnson, I think.
That guy catches that ball. By the time Lee tackles him, I bet they're in field goal range. They could tie it.
Oh, yeah.
Three right there.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. You know, the thing, that's why for me the onside kick wasn't as bad of a decision by Mizzou as maybe some other people do, because Mizzou still had the ball on the edge of field goal range with about 45 seconds left, no timeouts, but it's going to stop on the first.
Right.
So it wasn't like, you know, that ended the game by going onside kick.
Right.
You know, the defense did what it was supposed to do. As you said, Bama punts it back, didn't really gain a whole lot by punting the football. You know, in a couple of explosive plays, you're right there in field goal range. I thought Prabula got a little greedy in that scenario. I don't think he had to work that area of the field even at that particular time. But again, that's why you wanted him in that situation, throwing the ball from the cup. Right.
No doubt about it. Wild game, 27-24. Defensively for Alabama, let's touch on that. I thought Nakaiho Green played his best game at Alabama, made some nice plays, did a few things in coverage too, not just stopping the run. Mm-hmm. So impressive work from Hill Green. He ends up with 7 tackles. Deontay Lawson made 7 stops as well. I chatted with Lawson real quick after the game. He was one of the players that was made available to media and asked him about the fake punt. And he admitted that he turned his back early.
Which
football 101, you don't turn your back until you see that punt come out. Right?
I mean, don't you have to be in punt safe right there, though? I mean, it shouldn't even be an option.
Yeah.
I mean, at that field position where Missouri was on the field and with what they had to get, I mean, you had Alabama fans. You had watch the fake guy. You know, 70 rows up screaming, watch the fake, watch the fake.
Sitting right next to watch the tight end guy.
Watch the tight end guy was right in the first quarter when Norfleet took advantage of a couple of guys primarily.
Yeah.
I think,
what'd you make of that Damani Jackson play right there?
Oh,
or non play? It was ugly.
Com exec chiming in here in the show chat. Speak of the devil. What is going on with Damani in your mind? Seems to have regressed, especially in run support. Well, CE, he had a couple in the passing game also. I don't know. You know, I said this after the game last night too, Chase. I know they feel comfortable with those three corners and rotating those three, but it's getting to the point, or maybe past the point. I'm not sure where you're at on this, where it's going to get harder and harder not to have 2 and 5 out there. Yeah. Is your first two guys. And then if you want to try to rotate Damani in there, that's fine. It just has not been the season that I know a lot of people anticipated for him. And, you know, he got caught in man coverage there too late in the game, and they hit an explosive on him. And it's, you know, it seems like offenses are trying to dial him up more and more, and not just in the passing game either. They're running that way, it seems like, too.
Yeah, to address Comex's question directly, I would say that you have to be good in the first place to regress. Mm-hmm. And it's been a struggle for Damani, to me, for some time in run support. As for the Norfleet touchdown, you know, the ball was thrown high, and you know, I think Alex Scarborough made a point from 247 Sports that I thought was at least worthy of consideration. He said, look, that ball was thrown high. Jackson looked to him anyway like he was trying to make a play on the ball, maybe get a pick, but you're 2 steps out of bounds.
Yeah. Is he making a pick in the CFL?
Where's the field awareness? 1. And 2, even if you are going to make even if you are looking to make that play, well, make it at the catch point, right?
Yeah. He's going to make the play down around his waist, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, and you just don't want to get after one guy all the time, you know, because there were other guys that had their moments too, on Saturday. But yeah, it just seems like consistently it's happened a good bit to Damani Jackson. And to your point earlier, I think people think of him as regressing this year because last year, relative to that group, there was a time where he was their best corner, probably early in the season when Xavien was playing a lot as a true freshman. But relative to Patrick Surtain and, you know, some of the other corners that we've seen over the last 20 years.
No, I mean, he's
never stacked up with those guys. He's been okay at times, but you know, like you said earlier, to regress, I guess it's a relative term to what you're comparing it to.
Dejon Lee, to your point about what this is going to look like going forward, if I remember correctly, and this is a rough estimate, Lee played twice as many snaps as Jackson. I think Lee's snaps were in the 40s and Jackson's were in the 20s. So it's in that neighborhood. So I do think, like you said, Travis, we're heading to a point where 2 and 5 are going to be the more regular outside guys. And, you know, Jackson makes a play here and there. There's no question about it. But
he had a bust early too, though. Like, they got Damani out the next series. You had a free guy running behind the secondary and Prabula missed him, as I recall. And
I
didn't know if that was a safety or Lee on that, but
Lee,
the sideline, it looked like Lee just squatted. Like he got caught with his,
he was in zone.
Lee
was in some kind of zone there.
I think he was supposed to carry that guy maybe on the outside,
blown assignment for sure. Possible. But because Hubbard wasn't in the neighborhood.
Right.
So, you're right.
But Lee's a freshman. I mean, Lee's a freshman. Yeah. And he's making plays. I mean, he should have had 2 interceptions. He had the one that he had that he high pointed beautifully that he wasn't able to finish.
What did you make of the deep ball that Prabula hit on Jackson late in that one-on-one situation to convert a big third down?
I didn't think that was bad coverage. I just didn't like, I think they brought 5 right there. You know, and maybe Kane's thinking too, he's worried about his guys on the back end. So he figures let's heat this guy up and maybe get home or get a hit on him or at least make him get it out before he wants to, you know?
Right.
And so that was another one of those. I didn't think the coverage was terrible, but it just feels like it snowballs after a while with some guys, you know.
I thought that was a hell of a ball by Prabula. I thought it was one of the better throws that he's made this year. You like Jackson to flip around and look for the ball, maybe a heartbeat quicker, and maybe be able to get a PBU on it. But it was a hell of a pass.
It was
by Prabula. So
we saw Saban corners get beat like that. You know, Saban would tell you, "Well, he's in phase," you know, and good ball beat, good coverage. So to me, that wasn't as egregious as what happened on the earlier play.
Completely agree with you on that. Keon Keeley in the action a little bit, Travis. Got an assisted sack. We haven't seen hardly any of him defensively, but he was among the rotators. I think he got 15 or so snaps and got in there for a piece of a sack. Good to see that from him.
Yeah, he did. Did some nice. I thought the 4-man pass rush wasn't terrible. And the good thing was, for a majority of the game, it wasn't like Mizzou was going fast. So you were able to sub and kind of stay fresh in your pass rush. So, hey, if this is the starting point for something with Keon Keeley, great. You can never have enough. You can never have enough quality, healthy running backs, as I think Alabama's about to learn once again. Unfortunately, with JM's situation, we'll see. And you can never have enough fresh pass rushers. So that's a good thing with Keeley.
Based on the fact that we saw Hill in the game late at running back, Travis, I would assume that if unless something about the practice week changes things, you would think that if Jam Miller can't go against Tennessee, that we're looking at some kind of a Riley Hill split in the backfield, would you think?
That's what I would deduce from Saturday. I mean, that's the guys we pretty much saw. I like Hill when the gap game, run game isn't going to maybe be as productive because there's too much disruption or you're maybe a little limited in your guys that you're trying to pull after you get beyond Parker Brailsford. Geno Vandermark isn't what I would call a great puller. So when you're trying to run these counters and this gap type of stuff, you know, that stuff can get blown up. I like that Alabama eventually just pretty much said, we're going direct runs more rather than even try to mess with some of that slower developing stuff. And Tennessee will bring those linebackers too. I mean, they'll get downhill in a hurry. They're aggressive in their approach. So yeah, I would think, you know, you got a mix there with Riley, kind of a crafty, you know, undersized a little bit type of back that you can throw it to. And then Daniel Hill at 240 pounds, when and if you, you need to mash it.
All right. The Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Want to thank our listeners and viewers. Ask you to contribute as well to Parker Covers Alabama, 501c3 nonprofit supporting wheelchaired Alabama residents. You can do it at parkercoversalabama.com. Please give what you can. We'd appreciate it here on Talking Tide. This is the Ryer on YouTube channel. Travis, let's go ahead and zip around the SEC before we close things out here.
One thing real quick, some housekeeping. We got Shane chiming in here in the chat.
Yeah.
And he's thinking, I think the play he's thinking of was the ball down inside the five that Prabula converted to set up the touchdown to cut it to 27-24. That play was on Deshaun Jones. The one we were talking about, Shane, was a little earlier when Damani was in coverage. Go ahead, Chase.
First touchdown, right?
Yep.
Ole Miss 24-21 over Washington. Lane Kiffin takes a little poke at the student section. Says they were he said something to the effect
red
of
zone, red zone offense didn't show up, kind of like the student section, he said. Oh,
love it. Texas A&M hammers Florida 34-17. Second year in a row, A&M has really put it to the Gators. They got that one done in College Station. Travis, I watched a fair bit of that one. I did not think Florida was – it was competitive early.
Oh, gosh.
But the second half and really the last three quarters were all Texas A&M. The Longhorns win that Red River rivalry 23-6 over the Sooners. Hand OU their first loss of the season. John Mateer with three picks. And that one,
yeah, Texas, he's playing with like a surgically repaired thumb on his throwing hand. What were you thinking? With that tells you how much confidence they have in Michael Hawkins Jr., right?
Yeah, yeah. You see, the kid from Chipotle broke the news that Mateer was going to play. That was awesome. Mateer had gone in there for a burrito or something, and the kid asked him, "Are you playing?" He's like, "Yeah, I'm playing." All of a sudden, you know, Woodward and Bernstein over here at Chipotle. Georgia 20-10 over Auburn. Travis, highly controversial officiating in that one. You had the Auburn AD, John Cohen, getting after the boys. Looked like Fred Bullard at the 50-yard line, Travis, in that Bulls game.
You know, that was Cohen going ahead and letting the fan base know he's our guy. He's getting another year no matter what. Well, you know, who hired Hugh Freeze?
Yeah.
That guy. So, That if I'm an Auburn fan, that would be my takeaway from Cohen after the game, was that he's basically telling me this isn't Hugh's fault. None of this is. Yeah. We've gotten screwed by the refs all year, you know, and it was. I mean, it was a tough play. And here's my thing about that and a couple things. The thing I didn't notice at first was that there was a first punch on the ball when what I saw initially was the second punch. So when I saw the second punch, I thought, well, the ball had already crossed, but when they really got in there on it, and it still might have been an Auburn touchdown, I'm not saying it wasn't, but the on the field call, once I saw that first punch, you knew it was going to be tough to overturn. And the point too is all this money that is in this stuff now, okay, all the hundreds of millions, billion dollars that's in college football now, we got to depend on a pylon cam basically to help us with that call.
Yeah.
You know, come on, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Here's and look, you were still up. And Georgia had the argument too. Look, our guy was never down. Yeah. After the he would have gone 99 yards the other way for a touchdown. Yeah. And you were still up 10-0 with Georgia, who was atrocious offensively in the first half, backed up. And then you proceed to basically almost foul out on defense on the next series, and Georgia's able to go down, get a field goal, and then the game just totally flipped on Auburn.
Yeah, Georgia's defense got a second-half shutout. The Auburn offense wasn't any better in the second half than Georgia's was in the first, at least in terms of point production. So it flipped. Rough one for the Tigers. And what about Kirby Smart saying, hey, I'm just over here clapping, guys. I'm just clapping.
Oh, jeez. Gamesmanship, Chase. Gamesmanship.
You bet. Yeah.
And, you know, as far as the Florida thing goes, I'm done. You know, I've kind of been, it won't surprise me if Florida, you know, gets somebody this week. And they did get Texas a couple weeks ago, but I'm done with that. I don't see how that continues moving forward beyond this year with Billy Napier. Man, the firing's already piling up, man. What about James Franklin?
Franklin out the door, yeah. $50 million buy. I've heard everything from 45 to 58 million on
second
the buyout.
Second highest in college football history, behind I think Pete Thamel had that stat, or one of the national guys or gals. Second highest buyout behind Jimbo. You know, Jimbo got damn near $80 million.
Yeah,
to leave Texas A&M.
Unbelievable, these buyouts. It's sickening, frankly. It drives me up the wall. I can't stand it. don't like it a bit. Before we leave A&M, by the way, quick note on the Aggies, Travis. I know you and I both think that's a dangerous team.
Yep.
Listen to this now. Defensively for Texas A&M against Florida, they've played three SEC games, Florida, Mississippi State, and I forget the third off the top of my head, whoever it was. Their three SEC opponents this year are Auburn. Auburn. Thank you. 2 for 33 on third down.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's wild, but that's Elko. Mike Elko, defensive guy. I love that they are so complimentary when you watch them in all three phases. Like it syncs up. They know who they are and what their identity is, and they play to it. And maybe they don't kick it particularly well or consistently, but they are. And you think about them, you don't think about a lot of star power, right? I mean,
right.
KC Concepcion coming in there from the transfer portal was an absolute revelation. But I don't know if you look at them right now and say, oh, they got 8 or 10 first and second team all SEC guys. He's got that culture and that thing already set up for the long haul, it looks like.
One of two remaining undefeated teams in the SEC are the Aggies, along with the Ole Miss Rebels. Elsewhere, Travis, before we get out of here, LSU gets it done at home, 20-10 over South Carolina. Lenora Sellers not very effective on the road for the Gamecocks. And Tennessee takes care of Arkansas 34-31. That Tennessee defense, and you mentioned Taylen Green's explosiveness and effectiveness, but that Tennessee defense has been pretty damn porous this year. They get it done, though, at home, 34-31, in Bobby Petrino's interim debut.
Yeah, and you knew Bobby would have that thing cooking on offense, and they did, but the problem is they still, as I said earlier, still have some just catastrophic issues with taking care of the football, and that defense is still awful for Arkansas. Yeah. I mean, they cannot slow down really any aspect of offensive football. So, yeah, Tennessee gets the job done. That was an entertaining game. You know, it seems like with LSU, every game is going to be 20-10 one way or the other. Like, right. You go ahead and put the score up and just pick one of the teams involved. Every LSU game, it seems like this season, is pretty much like 20-10, 20-17. It's going to be something like that.
That LSU Ole Miss was 24-19.
Yeah.
You know,
what was Clemson? Right. Clemson was like 20-13, something like that. South Carolina 20-10. Florida was like 20-10, I think. Yeah.
They're playing defense down there on the
bayou. Blake Baker. Yep. He's got everything going.
Here they go. 17-10 was the Clemson score. La Tech was only 23-7.
Oh, yeah.
Florida 20-10. Mm-hmm. Ole Miss 24-19. South Carolina 20-10. They blew out. They blew out Sela. But yeah, it's not
20-10 Tigers.
No doubt. And how about for another potential 20-10er? They're going to Nashville for an 11 a.m. kick for you. I can see that one being low scoring too.
Yeah, absolutely. Rock fight, you know.
Love it. All right, that is going to do it.
College basketball without the shot clock, potentially, you know.
Yes. Power forwards everywhere. Be my kind of game.
Back to the basket.
Yeah.
Back to the basket, good bread. That's what I call him, you know.
He loves wait. Can't wait for back. Got that SEC basketball media days coming up.
He's still got a Kevin McHale poster somewhere at Considine. Good bread, I bet.
Rolled up in the attic, you know.
Yeah, working that up and under, you know. Uh-huh. Yeah.
That'll do it for us here on the Talking Tide podcast and the Ryer on YouTube channel. Had a lot of fun with this one. Be sure to join us again Wednesday night for the midweeker as we preview Alabama's home game against Tennessee. Until then, we'll talk to you later.